I don't know. Should we introduce Erica?
Sure.
Erica, our niece, cousin, however you want to call her, is visiting today, so we're glad to see her here today. She's going to be judging the class, apparently. Which I'm sure I need. And I'm sure she'll be fair. We got through Judges 1 through 7, and how do we, Proverbs, yeah, I'm on Judges. I'm still on Judges, I'm sorry. Proverbs 1, 1 through 7, and remember what the foundational verse talks about. What is the foundational verse of Proverbs?
Fear of the Lord.
Right. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge or wisdom. It's the very foundational principle I don't want to lose track of as we go through Proverbs. And that's what we need in order to understand all the rest of what follows. And so we're looking today, hopefully, at Proverbs 1, 8 through 33, which are actually two different topics. One instructs the first instruction to a son, and then secondly, wisdom's first sermon. And so, why don't we open in prayer? And could I get Ken? Could you open in prayer for us today? Thanks.
Father, thank you so much for your presence here in our time in your word. Lord, I just pray that we are guided by your spirit and that we speak your words, not ours. For indeed, the beginning of wisdom is your fear of you, Lord, a holy and reverence. Before an awesome and majestic God. Just open our eyes that we would see the truth in your scriptures and that it would touch our hearts to conform us and to make us more in your image and to bring glory to your name. And we just thank you so much that we can enter into your presence and you are indeed here. And we just commit this time to you.
So if we look at Proverbs chapter 1 and look at verses 8 through 19, maybe we just read these a few at a time. I'll go back and forth reading the whole thing or reading them at a time, whatever is the most smooth as we go through this. But I at least want to look at the transition from where the opening talked about what the book of Proverbs is about to the first instruction to the son. And is this instruction... You know, we talked about the gullible, we talked about the fool, but we kind of switch gears here and now talk about the son who is at the stage of immaturity, or not quite maybe majority, but the father is still instructing or raising up his son and giving him this first lesson. But let's just, I'll tell you what, let's read 8 through 19, and maybe we can, if somebody wants to read 8 through 12 and somebody else 13 through 19. Ken, can I get you to read 8 through 12? And then we'll go this way. And, yeah, 13 through 19.
Hear, my son, your father's instructions, and forsake not your mother's teachings, for they are a graceful garland on your head, a pendant on your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Like Sheol, let us swallow them alive, and the whole like those who go down to the pit.
13 through 19. Can I get you to read 13 through 19?
We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. Throw in your lot with us, and we will share a common purse. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths, for their feet rush into sin. They are swift to shed blood. How useless to spread a net in full view of all the birds. These men lie in wait for their own blood. They waylay only themselves. Such is the end of all who will go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the lives of those who get it.
So, how does the father couch this first description of sin, of the, I mean, he's talking about the gang, right? He's talking about a gang of guys that this son is trying, this gang is trying to influence this son. How does the father describe these people? Yeah.
Cunning.
Cunning?
To entice someone.
Right.
To actually appeal or to try to figure out a way to bring someone.
Right, right. So you've got this idea of his description of evil, or this gang, is a gang of cunning, you know. But he's also, when you look at this, he has descriptive words in their actions. And when you look at how the father describes it, think about, is that how the gang would describe what they're doing? Because he's actually acting as if he's saying exactly what the gang is saying. Right? Have you ever done that? Have you ever put your spin on what's taking place? I mean, because first of all, in verse 8 and 9, he starts with his instruction, but he's also talking about listen to my instruction, but also listen to your mother's instruction. Mm-hmm. I think we often fail to do that, to fail to instruct our children, look, don't come to one or the other of us. Listen to both of us. You know how that goes, right? You don't get the answer you want. You go to the other parent, and then you go to that other parent. And say, well, mom said or dad said, but that's not that he's talking about the actual instruction that the children will listen to both of them. And what's the reward of listening to instructions? In verse 9.
Burning on your head.
Right. How is that meaningful in that culture? What did that really mean in that culture? I mean,
Sorry, I was going to ask, did they carry a lot of their wealth in jewelry? Or, I don't know. Because I know when they stripped the Egyptians and they left, that was kind of pretty symbolic.
Right.
Of taking their wealth.
Right. And as you see a lot in India today, you know, where they wear their wealth, the women wear their wealth on themselves, or they, you know, it's all in gold. And that's kind of the gifts they give for weddings is gold. And so this idea of the ornament about your neck, or a necklace of, you know, value, it's also
prosperous.
Yeah. So it's a prosperous thing, yes, but it's somebody else reading say something, Terry.
I was just gonna say it sounds like the wreath sounds like the sort of thing a winner would get in an athletic competition.
Right.
The way you were just describing the necklace sounded like the gold medal from the Olympics or something. So,
right. Mm-hmm. I think there's also that. It's the prize at the end, yeah.
Evidently, something that can be seen.
Right. It's an outward sign. They actually, the reward is going to be not only in you, but it's going to be expressed to others that you have that reward, yeah.
And their approach is to incite greed, and it's greed that's going in there, and it eventually comes into killing people.
Right. Right, right. Yeah, here's the wealth. Here's the reward of listening to instruction. Remember about listening, that word meaning more than just hearing, but actually paying attention, absorbing it, grasping it, taking it with you. Yeah, are you going to say something?
I was just thinking of something beautiful in your life, something worthy, something that shows beauty.
Right, yeah.
And also, it's true what you just said, the great, it says, because it's graceful, beautiful. But it also sets someone apart, mm-hmm. because it's visual. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's something that says you're different. I mean, in the context of a gang here, you're going to be set apart from this if you listen
right.
to something that puts you in an individual position, and you'll be seen.
Right.
You know, set apart.
Right. Yeah.
It could also be a warning, because they don't want their son ambushed and killed, mm-hmm. and all that. So they want to put a scenario that you don't want to be in that group. Also, we need to know about that kind of thing so you can avoid it.
Right. It's something to remind yourself, but also to show other people. Yeah.
It could be, too, that, like, he has like, two paths. He can either find his family's identity or the name from his family
right.
as his recognition of being blessed and approved by them, or he can try to go make a name for himself with this group.
Yeah. And that's what, I think somebody said it, maybe Kendall, you had mentioned that last week. It seems like there's two choices. There's not three. It's this or this. You know, over and over, we'll see that in Proverbs. It's this path or this path. And it's a very stark contrast between the two, because the one has rewards and symbols of honor or life, these outward symbols of honor, of set apart, of the glory, or but just the difference between that and then when you talk about this gang. Because when the father's talking about the gang, you know, he's giving this spiritual, not a human wisdom speech, because he talks about it in, you know, he even condemns them with the words he's using. He goes, that the gang says, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without cause. I don't think the gang is going to describe their actions like that. They're going to say, hey, let's go, you know, let's get some goods, you know, let's, whatever it is. They're not going to say, let's go ambush, let's lay in wait for blood. But that is exactly what they're doing. And the father's talking about it as, you know, the ambush is of the innocent. You know, by his very words, he goes, these people that they're attacking are innocent, and it's without cause that they're attacking them. So even the descriptive words he's using show the difference. Because when you're young, what is, when you look at life ahead of you, what are the goals that you may have out in front of you? You know, when you're getting out of college or still in college, you know, or you're starting a job, or you're deciding whether to go to college or not and launch into, you know, a job right away, you know, what are the things that often you're looking for? So, yeah. Yeah. What is the world, let's put it this way, what does the world put in front of you as that's what you're seeking after? This is why you do these things.
Material stuff.
Material or wealth.
Acceptance.
Right. Power. Acceptance. Recognition.
Marry a beautiful wife with money.
There you go. That's right. In fact, I was accused of doing that. I had a great job. I was still in school. But that's right. I mean, this idea of wealth, or that's the long-term goal, but often when you're young, the temptation is, and even when you're not young, the temptation is to try to achieve that in a short term. You know, try to achieve wealth. There's a way to get there now, because we're very anxious to get there, and especially when we're younger and don't see the importance of patience or a longer range goal. We want to see it, you know, the results now. And that's what this temptation is. That's what this gang is pulling this kid or this son into, is we can get this now. We can get the rewards now. We can see the results of our actions, not through hard work, but from taking it from somebody else who has it, who's innocent, who would attack without cause. And then what's the result of it? You know, he's still, the father's acting as though the gang is saying this with their, let us swallow them alive like Sheol. And that word alive actually includes more than just, you know, taking them alive. It's someone who's full health and vitality. That word is, it connotes those additional ideas, that it's someone who is without cause, innocent, but also full of life that they're going to attack, and they need the gang to take care of that. They can't do it on their own. And then as it says, they go even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall have one purse. What are they saying? You know, what is the gang trying to convince this son to do is to go attack?
Share.
That's right.
Share of it.
That's right. We'll get an equal share.
Yeah, it's in the community.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of things. What was that? That's right. That's right. It's throwing the gang. I mean, if you ever watch those old westerns, you know, the gang is out there. They're all going to throw in their lot. They're going equal share. Does it ever work out that way?
No.
That's right. Billy the Kid always gets the most. And there's always a fight, you know, between the rest of the gang. If they kill one of them, then they have a better, you know, each share will be, you know, bigger. You know, all that type of, and that's what he's talking about. Because when he looks at this, when the father's looking at this and saying, here's the gang's argument, here's what they're throwing out in front of you. This is the attraction. But when you put it in, you know, take their rose-colored glasses off of what they're doing and look at what they're really doing, here's the picture of what they're really doing. And so the father then takes, you know, he takes their words, but then he turns it to show not only that this is shedding innocent blood, but their action is stupid. You know, it's when you look at this, because he compares that. I had to read this a few times on that bird and the net. What do you think the father's trying to say there with this idea of, in verse 15 through 19, you know, don't walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. Don't even start down the path with them. For their feet run to evil, they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, and here's that example, it's useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. What do you think he's trying to tell them? Yeah, I think you're right.
He's just saying, going to be found out.
Right, they're going to be found out, but Erica's was even a bird brain can see that it's a trap. You know, that this path they're leading you down is a trap for you. It's going to pull you in. How can you not see the baited net in front of you? Even a bird flying through the air is smart enough to see that net. And they've laid this net right in front of you. They've told you what they're going to do. They're spreading the trap right in front of you with their description of what they're going to do. How can you not see that as a trap? Because even a bird, even God's, you know, smallest, you know, flying bird, where he talks about, you know, he even pays attention to the sparrow, you know, this bird can escape that net. You have a way to escape, and it's not to start down their path, not to be tricked into following that. Were there thoughts on that one? It's this, you know, this father giving this example of how easy it should be to see what they're trying to do. Because they wait, you know, in verse 18, they wait, lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. So, what's that? Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing is the speaker. I know as a parent, there's mm-hmm. two ways to run this. You idiot, or I love you, uh-huh. and the intent is I care about you. Even you should see this, but it's you have to be careful not to cross a line and say,
right, how stupid
how
are
stupid
you?
How stupid can you be? It's kind of well. Yeah. Sometimes you're tossed by that because there's a passion involved in caring for kids.
Right.
You don't want them to go down that way.
Yeah. Have you ever had an example where your kids are saying, this does make sense. This is not as dangerous or as fraught with pitfalls as you think. And you have to explain, well, wait a minute. I'll give an example. But I don't necessarily do it if somebody else wants to. Are you nodding your head that you've heard that speech or you've given that speech?
Oh, no, I've not heard that.
Okay. You haven't had to tell Max. No, Max. Don't bounce the ball out in the street. But it's so much space. No, I mean, but really, I mean, as parents, we can see from experience because we have seen the world more, although sometimes our kids don't think we really have. That you can see that, no, going out with this group of friends that you've just met may not be the safest thing to do. You don't know them. You don't know where they're going. You don't know how you get out of, you're depending on them to get out, not driving yourself, whatever it is. That, and I'm not giving specific examples. Quit smiling like when it reveals something. But... And it's not so clear when you don't know that. I know. Yeah. My point score is going down. I can tell.
I've always been surprised if it's peer pressure and they want to belong to a group and there's some needing to get into it that they get into things and then they naively think these crummy, dishonest people are going to be nice to them and fair to them when they're just going to probably punch him in the head and leave him somewhere bloody. But
right.
Yeah,
right.
It's just that naive thing carries over. Oh, well, this group will like me.
Right.
Well, the parents are going, no, we like you better.
You know? Right. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. And that's the, you see this father in his description of the gang and what their actions will lead to. It won't only destroy the innocent that they have attacked. It will just, they'll destroy themselves. They're going to destroy themselves. They're trying to get this gain by violence. How is it going to end up? They're going to end up in jail. They're going to end up dead. They're going to come up against someone who is more powerful than they are in their attack, and they're going to end up dead or chased down and killed, whatever it is. That's going to be their end. And so in this first instruction to the son, you see the father impressing on the son the danger of running with the gang seeking immediate gain, and running with the wrong crowd, not being led to a group with the right crowd, with those who are like-minded, who are seeking wisdom, who are not following the world. And then we turn to wisdom in verses 20 through 33. And why don't we read through again, and maybe I can start in the back row, whoever wants to read, starting in verse 20 through 30, I'm sorry, 20 through 26. And then somebody else, yeah, go ahead.
The son calls the lad in the street. She raises her voice in the public squares. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. In the gateways of the city, she makes her speech. How long will you simple ones love your simple ways? How long will mockers delight in mockery and fools hate knowledge? If you had responded to my rebuke, I would have poured out my heart to you and made my thoughts known to you. But since you rejected me when I called, gave heed when I stretched out my hand. Since you ignored all my advice and would not accept my rebuke, in turn I will laugh at your disaster. I will mock when calamity overtakes you.
Jay, could you read 27 to 33?
Sure. When calamity overtakes you like a storm, and disaster sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you, then they will call to me, but I will not answer. They will look for me, but will not. Since they hated knowledge and did not choose to fear the Lord, since they would not accept my advice and spurned my rebuke, they will eat the fruit of their ways and be filled with the fruit of their schemes. For the waywardness of, I'm sorry, where am I supposed to be?
233.
Okay. For the waywardness of the simple will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But whoever listens to me will live in safety and be at ease without fear of harm.
Right. And here again, wisdom's giving two choices. You know, wisdom or folly. And where is wisdom speaking? In this. What's that?
In the street.
In the street, in the square.
The town center.
The town center. Right at the, you know, head of the street, head of the gates, right where all the people are gathering. That's where wisdom is giving her speech. And how is wisdom speaking?
Loudly.
She cries out. Mine says it. She shouts, or loudly. She lifts her voice in the square. This is not a soft-spoken message given in the corner. You know, this is the declaration, pleading with everyone to hear wisdom, to hear what she has to say, and it's out in the open. You know, it's at the head of the noisy streets. She cries out. It's over the din of the crowd. You know, it's yelling or passionate in her speech as she declares what she's trying to get across. And she's speaking to whom?
Anyone
who'll hear.
That's the interesting thing. She's speaking loudly, but that doesn't necessarily, there's a noise going on around. It's kind of like if we were all talking, someone could be speaking wisdom. It's just one voice amongst all the voices. But she's speaking as loud as she can, but that doesn't mean that it's the predominant speech. There's all sorts of noise going on.
Right.
I can't remember exactly where it is, but when Jesus is talking about John the Baptist and how should he compare this generation, saying, we sang a dirge when you did not mourn, and we sang a, what is it?
played the lyre.
Who played the lyre and you did not dance. It's kind of like that. Like, right out in the open, you know, we're here, but you just don't see it and you're not listening.
Yeah. Have you ever seen a street preacher preach in the head of the street or in the crowded square? What's the typical reaction? Pretend he's not there.
Arguing.
Yeah, well, to be fair, he's usually not preaching. I don't know. He's usually you condemning instead of preaching the gospel.
Yeah. So sometimes the one yelling is the message they're giving is not the gospel. It may be something different. The typical response is, you know, you see scoffing or mocking or arguing or ignoring, or I want to get out of here, just don't pay attention to them. But if you ever heard a true street preacher, on some of the mission trips, they'll actually stand, in Belize sometimes, they'll preach on the street corner or other places where they're trying to preach the gospel, and it's more prevalent. I think when we were younger, you'd see that more often, true gospel preacher on the street corner. You don't see it so much anymore. But this mocking or scoffing, I mean, when you look at this, who is likely? Who, in verse 22, speech is talking to someone or a group of people and then compares them to someone who might listen, someone who's not going to listen. Who's the possible audience? Who might listen?
Naive.
The naive, the gullible, the ones who are trainable or teachable, they might listen. And then she compares them to what's fools and scoffers, those who are so, remember I talked to them about them last week, they're so full of themselves, they know the answer, they're so arrogant, they don't need to hear this. And you do see that. You see the mockery, the scoffing of those who are just not going to listen. They're not going to hear you. They're not going to hear this message. And so the gullible have two choices. It says, how long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? What do you think that means? The naive love being simple-minded. Do you think someone who is naive loves being naive? Yeah.
So they're so naive, they don't even know they're naive.
Yeah. I mean, this... And what's the sermon about? What is she moving towards?
Come to me and get wisdom.
Right. Are you going to pay attention to wisdom, or are you going to, do you so strongly desire the sin before you that you're willing to stay simple-minded and just keep following that sin and keep living in that sin and what's going to be the result of it? Because she talks about what's going to be the result of this. And so the gullible, they're not scoffers or fools yet, but they're so in love with being simple-minded, they're so in love with this sin that they're following, that it may be difficult to turn them away from it. And so she's speaking in this loud voice, she's yelling out from the street corner to try to turn them away before it's too late, before they become a scoffer or a mocker, and they've gone that way and are no longer willing to listen. And she says, turn to my reproof. If they'll only turn, and this reproof is more like a chastening instruction. It's not just a wisdom saying, but it's actually chastening them to listen. Then what's the result? If they turn, and we'll stop here. But if the naive turns to listen to wisdom, and it's going to say different things in different versions in verse 23.
It says, I will pour out my spirit to you, and I will make my words known to you.
Right. So if you just turn to this chastening reproof, the result is, and it's this pouring out is like a gushing forth, a pouring forth of wisdom, a pouring forth of the instruction, and then a provision of understanding of what she's saying. That's what the result of the naive turning to the instruction of wisdom will be. It'll be an understanding heart. It'll be an understanding of the wisdom, of the message that's coming. And then the warning we'll start with next week. The warning of failing to do that, there's this overemphasis. In fact, it's emphasized four times what's going to happen. And then what will wisdom's reaction be And then what's the result of listening again at the end? So there's two things in here. In verse 23 and 26, this message starts and ends with a promise to those who listen, but then instruction on what happens if you don't listen. What's the result of seeking after, following after sin, and searching for that instead? So, any thoughts, yeah?
Sometimes it works, though. Crying out in the wilderness sort of a thing. Because sometimes if you can just get a few people that are listening, then some of the other people get curious. I've seen that in evangelism in the streets. I've also seen it like we have a friend that does Native American ministry, and they do that. They go and they go to the places and ask for people to come. And if a few come, then the other people get curious, and then the scoffers get in back scoffing for a while, and then they start to get captured by it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes just having a few naive people can really make a big difference.
Right, a few who are willing to listen,
yeah.
Those naive. We had that when I was in high school in Mexico. We'd go up into the villages on mission trips that they kept telling us they'd never seen a white man. It was way up in the mountains. And we'd go around and telling them we were going to have a service that night. They'd come out of curiosity many times, but many times we saw the whole village profess faith. They'd never heard it before. I think you saw that where you saw people hanging around just seeing what's going on, right? This curiosity, what's happening in Bangladesh, that they would just stand there and stare at them. Sometimes too close, right? But it's that curiosity, you know, that draws them in. They're naive, they're gullible, they need to learn it. They're willing to listen. They're still able to hear.
And one of the tactics I've seen work in evangelism is if you start with the community,
right.
And they start to warm up a little bit with that, and then you can do it.
You build up
stay
the
there
trust.
And they think there's more to eat, so you know.
Hey, I'll come.
Of course.
Basketball and ice cream. Well, let's pick up there next week. The rest of Wisdom's speech in chapter one, and then we'll move on to chapter two. Jay, could I get you to close in prayer?
Okay.
Thanks.
Lord, thank you for. Thank you for this time that we have together. Thank you for working through Barry to bring a message. Thank you for your word that's been sustained through the generations and still holds me today. Lord, please be with us this week. Help us pray and ask for wisdom and be patient and let the word set on our hearts.
Amen. Thank you.
Barry, what's that thing?